Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
This is how we welcome Sheldon into the studio.
Happy
Hello,
middle.
Sheldon.
How are you doing?
Well, it's so good to see you without crutches.
Yeah, I'm moving in the right direction. I'm moving on up, moving on up. At least.
Well done for making it through. How long was it?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's lovely to see you. And we are going to be dancing without crutches today.
Today without crutches.
What are we talking about today?
So, I was inspired last week by the interaction that President Cyril Ramaphosa had with our dear orange friend from across the pond. And how amazing was CD on?
She was brilliant.
Wow.
She was brilliant.
She killed it. She ate it up.
CD was brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was watching it and thinking to myself, music's such a powerful instrument that many people want to harness. Mm. They want to harness the power of music for their own purposes. Mm. And that's been happening for millennia. I mean, the Catholic Church used music to convey their messages, and kings and powerful people, like the classical music era, was all patronized by nobility who were trying to communicate certain messages through their music. It's not an uncommon thing. And in our current era or age, music is often used not only because of the music, but also of the association to the personality, because people want to shift the narrative and they want to convey certain messages and they want to align themselves with certain brands. And now artists are very much brands. And if you can align yourself with the correct brand, then you can leverage that power for whatever it is that you want to achieve. So I was thinking about, because I was watching Donald Trump, and I was thinking to myself, wasn't he the guy who got blocked by 600 million musicians in his presidential campaigns because they didn't want his music, their music associated,
to be played in this campaign?
Exactly. And he wanted that specific music because he was trying to shift the narrative in a specific way. So then I thought, let's do a show on songs that have been used by American presidential candidates to try and shift the narrative. Now, Andra Day is a relatively unknown artist, but this song, Rise Up, which we featured in a show earlier this year, was originally written for a friend. The friend had cancer, and she says that she wrote the song and it had this message, Rise Up, which she says it's a very cliche message. But at times when you're at your lowest, that's when cliches make the most sense. Mm-hmm. It's not like when you're in a good place that a cliche is like, oh, that's just cringe.
Yeah.
But when you're at your lowest point, that's when cliches make the most sense. She wrote this song, and it wasn't like an overwhelming success, but it became like an underground anthem. I mean, it only went to number 101 in the United States, but it sold 4 million units in the US, which tells you that the song was surreptitiously being sold and people were very interested in the song, but it didn't have that big boost to push it up the charts.
Yeah.
Anyway, in 2016, Hillary Clinton used this song in her Democratic National Convention. So at that national convention where she was elected as the candidate to be president of the United States, this was the song she used. Now, thinking of someone like Hillary Clinton and using an artist like Andra Day, what you're trying to do in that instance is you're trying to shift the narrative. You are a white woman in the United States. Where are you going to get votes from? You need to try and get some kind of pull from somewhere else. And the association with a black African-American artist with a message like Rise Up, which you almost like saying, I believe in the civil rights movement. Mm. I believe in this narrative and I want to be associated with that. You're trying to pull a very specific kind of audience to your campaign.
Yeah.
And that was our first song.
Point of View.
Sharing the rhythm and beat. Beat.
Well, Pharrell.
Yes.
Pharrell Williams.
So that was Pharrell.
Who looks 21.
I know. And this guy, he just blows my mind because he's also the creative director for Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's just a man of many talents.
He's ultra cool.
Very cool. And it reinforces my belief that artists are multidimensional.
He's an artist.
Yeah. And you know, like they don't, a real artist will dabble in many different things because I think there's, as an artist, your creativity is so profound and so wide that one element is not going to be sufficient to satisfy that creative need. So hence the exploration of fashion and music and art and production and, you know, like a whole variety of things. So this song was done in 2013, and it was from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack, but also from his first solo album called Girl. Although he had released some albums as part of a band called NERD, which was part of his production team called the Neptunes, which was him and Chad Hugo. But what happened with this scenario was that he had done some work for a French house band called Daft Punk. And they'd done some work together with Nile Rodgers and him and Daft Punk. And he sang on some of the tracks on Random Access Memories by Daft Punk. And then they were like, hey, maybe you should release your own album. And he got a recording deal to release a solo album. And out of that came this song, Happy, which originally was written for CeeLo Green. And Pharrell believed that CeeLo had the perfect voice for the song, and CeeLo recorded the song, and he was like, this is your song. But the problem was that CeeLo at the time was about to release his Christmas album, and his record company didn't want this song to clash with the release of the Christmas album, and so they turned the song down. Anyway, Pharrell releases it, and it becomes a movement. Not just a song, it becomes a movement because people around the world were doing the dance, and it was like it became a whole movement. The song went to number one in 22 countries. It sold 17 million units. It's huge, massive. Anyway, with a song that has such immense power, a song that, you know, triggered a movement, politicians love that because they want to tap into that brand. They want to tap into that movement, whatever that represents.
That sunshine.
Exactly. And so in 2018, Donald Trump decided he was going to start using the song in his campaign. And Pharrell sent a cease and desist.
I remember that.
Saying, absolutely no, not. You can't use my song. You didn't get permission. Now, the thing is that the way things work in the music industry, it's a bit complicated. So when you release a song into the public domain, when the song goes out into the world and it's played on radio, anyone can cover that song. You've got to give them a compulsory license in order to cover the song. So anyone can cover the song as long as they get the necessary paperwork done. That being said, if you want to use the master recording of that song, you can't just use it without permission. And essentially what Pharrell was saying is, you can get someone else to record the song and use that, but you cannot use my voice in your campaign. You can't use my master recording, my voice, to push your agenda. Now, Donald Trump, it's very clever of him to try and associate himself with Pharrell Williams, a successful African-American man. Donald Trump, known for being a bit of a bigot. And then tapping into this aspirational African-American man, hopefully he can pull some black votes. And Pharrell was like, no, not with my voice, not with my music. You can't do it. And so he sent a cease and desist, and Donald Trump had to stop using the song. So a victory for Pharrell Williams. The song we heard prior to that is a song by an artist called Sam Cooke. And the song, I mean, the most beautiful falsetto voice. was released in 1964. And originally, the motivation for the song was Sam Cooke and his wife went to a motel, a Holiday Inn hotel, motel. And at the motel, it was in Louisiana, they got turned away because they were black. And he was so angry when, because you could see that the clerk at the entrance, well, the clerk said, we don't have any availability. And Sam Cooke immediately picked up that it wasn't anything to do with availability, but the fact that they were black. And so he had a fight with this guy, and he's like, this is unacceptable. How can you do this to me and whatever? And the wife said, this is not worth the fight. They will kill you here in the south of the United States. Let's get out of here. Anyway, they leave with the brother. The brother was with them, and they get to the next hotel, and the police are waiting there to arrest him for disturbing the peace. Anyway, I get arrested, and he, at that stage, thinks to himself, you know, what the heck is going on? Mm. He was driving on his way home. He hears a song on the radio by Bob Dylan called Blowing in the Wind. Mm. And he thinks to himself, here's a white guy who's taken on the civil rights mantra, but he's a white guy. Mm. Why am I, as a black guy, not talking about this? And up to that point, Sam Cooke's fear was that if he spoke up about the injustices in the south of the United States, he was going to lose his largely white audience. Mm. So he had never said anything because he was like, I can't afford to lose my feeder audience.
Yeah.
Anyway, he then got exposed to Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And the combination of the motel situation, the Bob Dylan song, and the Martin Luther King experience made him decide, I can't be a coward forever. I need to stand up and say something. And that's when he wrote, A Change is Gonna Come. Hmm. Now, in 2008, when Barack Obama became president, he used this song as his big song when he, well, he actually referred to the song in his victory speech. Mm. And as the first African-American president of the United States, tying himself to such a strong message about civil rights just reinforced the idea that it took such a long time for someone from the African-American community to take over and lead the United States. And he was trying to tie his victory to this long struggle that dated back to the 1960s and even before that, to show that there was progression and there was evolution in the journey. I mean, I don't know if that was the intention, but it makes sense that the tie back to something that went back so far, Rosa Parks in the 1960s as well, and this whole like history of civil rights in the United States and its ultimate culmination in President Barack Obama becoming the President of the United States.
Kaya
959.
Come on.
Mary J. Blige.
I love Mary J. Blige. She's one of my all-time favorite artists. She is like the, like Aretha Franklin handed over the baton to Whitney, and Whitney handed over the baton to Mary J. Blige.
I never.
Wow, you don't like Mary.
There is no way Aretha handed over to Whitney and Whitney to Mary J. Blige.
I
refuse.
Oh, I love
Mary J. Blige.
Sure.
But Mary J. Blige is not that caliber.
It's not that caliber of voice.
Well, not the caliber of voice.
I don't know. I think she's got an excellent voice. I love her.
Excellent, yes, but not Aretha of voice.
No more drama. Yo, that song.
Aretha? Whitney? Iwana Sheldon. I just love her.
I love Mary J. Blige. And this is from...
And I don't think it's about the voice. I think you just love her.
I just love her. I love everything she represents.
And she's great. But I don't think that voice is a Whitney and Aretha.
It's such an amazing voice. Anyway,
you know what I love about Mary? Yesterday?
Hey?
Wasn't it Aretha's birthday yesterday? Yes, it was.
No, Aretha's birthday is in March. It's on the 25th of March, the same day as Elton John.
Ah.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't know what happened. Maybe that's when she died?
Passed away.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Mary, what I love about Mary is what she represents. phenomenal vocalist, but also has gone through so much, like a real tough
life. She's a tough cookie, yeah.
And she's made it through so much, the drugs, the rape, this. It's just been one big thing after the next, and she's always come out flying. This was from her Growing Pains album, which was her eighth studio album. And the song is about self-love, and it explores Mary J. Blige's journey of self-acceptance. And I think that's a really big thing, because oftentimes what happens is you've got all the trappings. You've got the cars and the houses and the everything, but that still doesn't fill the void. And I think that was the thing with Aretha, is that with Mary, is that she had all of these things, big number one hits.
And, she struggled.
Yeah. And she just didn't accept herself. And I mean, that stems from childhood problems and traumas that you're never seen as good enough, or you're not seen as intelligent enough or talented enough or whatever it is. And you can't accept yourself. And so this song, Work That, was specifically about this journey of finding yourself and accepting who you are for what you are. And, you know, fortunately, I've never really had that problem, because I just love who I am. And I think more people need to love who they are. And it seems like
Sheldon.
No, come on, people. And I think the thing is that people, you know, they don't love their brand, you know. And and I remember someone saying, "You just think you're so great." Yes, I do think I'm great. And then they're like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "I was just agreeing with you. What is your problem? I'm agreeing with you. I think I'm great. You think I'm great. We all think I'm great. It's fabulous." But you've got to love yourself, because no one else is going to give you that. And if you love your brand and if you love who you are, then you've won. You've won. You don't need lots of money. You don't need fancy cars. You don't need beautiful clothes. You just need to love yourself. And that was what the song was about. Anyway, as part of this whole thing, and as I said to you, this music industry is very complicated. The song was written as part of like a collective. So it was Mary J. Blige, a guy called Teron Feimster, and Sean Garrett. They wrote this song together. And Mary J. Blige landed up getting sued by the Dream family. And the reason why they were suing her was because Teron Feimster was actually a composer working as a staff songwriter for the company, and he didn't get permission to be released from his contract. And so when the song was released, the company sued Mary J. Blige and said, "You didn't ask us for permission. We didn't release him from his contract, so therefore that intellectual property belongs to us, because we pay him a salary, and so therefore we own the intellectual property and you cannot release the song." Anyway, it went through a whole court process, and eventually the song was released, which adds more merit to the value of what the song is actually trying to communicate in the end. In 2019, Kamala Harris used this as a walkout song. Walkout songs are very popular. Wherever I appear, there's always a walkout song.
Go, Sheldon. Yeah.
No, I need a walkout song as well, because the Pope can't be in town without walkout music. And so this was a walkout song, which, once again, Kamala Harris, unfortunately, so it was for her 2019, and then in 2020, when she became the vice president, they played this song. Now, Kamala was in an unfortunate position, because, I mean, she was a woman, number one, and there's never been an American female president. And number two, a African-American woman, or a woman of mixed race, trying to get the popular vote in the United States, in a country which is, for all intents and purposes, quite a bigoted country. And now, how do you try and align the narrative? So obviously, you try and get it with someone like Mary J. Blige, but does Mary J. Blige really have that pull? And does this song have that pull to be able to pull that narrative? it maybe worked against her to a certain extent because it was just reinforcing the fact that she was so different from what people were accustomed to, whereas what she should have maybe tried to do is try and buy the audience by giving them something with which they would feel more familiar. And so that was her song. And our last song is a Beyoncé song that we're going to play, featuring Kendrick Lamar, 2016, from the album Lemonade, a song called Freedom. The song became a bit of like the Andra Day song, like an underground anthem. It wasn't really a big mainstream success, although people know the song because it became this very underground theme song. Now, it contains three samples in it. A song called Let Me Try by a band called Kaleidoscope, and then a 1959 song called Collection Speech, Unidentified Living Hymn by Alan Lomax from 1959, and then a Stewball, a song called Stewball by Prisoner 22 from the Mississippi State Penitentiary, because they couldn't name the guy, so they gave him a number. So the song steeped in the concepts of like slavery, and you can hear it in the very intentional pace of the song. Then you get Kendrick Lamar, so Beyoncé is now getting on in years, and she needs to buy that youth leverage by getting a Kendrick Lamar involved. Another interesting aspect of the song is there's a spoken word part which is performed by or spoken by Hattie White, who happens to be Jay-Z's grandmother, at her 90th birthday party.
No way.
Yeah, included in the song as well. And so the song is like steeped in this like heavy tradition of civil rights. And who uses the song? Kamala Harris again in 2024 for her presidential campaign.
I see what you mean.
So, not good choices. I mean, a great song and a brilliant artist. And if you can get that leverage with Beyoncé, because she's got a huge pool, the problem is that Beyoncé's pool is very African-American. So the audience is very limited. Instead of trying to go for a wider pool, she goes for quite a narrow pool.
Especially in the United States.
And a very civil rights-oriented pool. I mean, this song would have been great as a victory song, but not so much in the pre-story of trying to get to the presidency. Mm. It just, once again, reinforces her difference.
Geez, Sheldon, you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will see you next week.
Yes.
And so thanks, folks. We'll be back on Monday at 8.
Rhythm and Beat. On Point of View. Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.